Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this program brought to you by Smart Industry. The title of our program is Taming Data, No-Nonsense Ways to Overcome Information Overload and Drive Your Digital Transformation. We have two very special guests today for our program, Marcel Van Helton, who is president of Redline Controls, and Craig Resnick, who is VP of Consulting for ARC Advisory Group. Marcel's Redline provides solutions for cloud connectivity, edge intelligence, and asset management, industrial Ethernet switches and panel meters and operator panels for companies to gain data visibility. Craig's ARC offers advisory, market data and analytics, performance benchmarking, and tech selection services. Accessibility to quality data is maybe the highest barrier for manufacturing companies to clear, to proceed with plant or warehouse automation, and certainly to kickstart a digital transformation. A report from Hexagon and Forrester Consulting just this month says much, but it primarily told us this. Almost all industrials, 98% in fact, struggle with data and data-related issues in some important ways. As a manufacturer, the quality of your data and your ability to access it and share it within your organization and to your suppliers is directly related to how easily or how difficult it is to bring automation to your plant and or warehouse, and indirectly, the quality of the product you send to market and the speed at which you accomplish that. According to more findings from Craig's own ARC Advisory Group, you simply can't do smart manufacturing without reliable data. So the ability for customers to easily access that data from their industrial systems is imperative. Some other interesting facts courtesy of ARC. Only 39% of companies are well underway in their digital transformation. Cloud analytics and sustainability tracking and reporting are already being widely adopted as we proceed with 2024. And looking ahead, artificial intelligence, clean energy technologies, and analytics will have significant impacts on production operations everywhere in just 5 years, by 2029, in fact. Today, Marcel and Craig will help us address common challenges business owners face when their teams access data platforms, and the easiest way to navigate the overwhelming amount of information that the platforms provide. So welcome to our program, Marcel and Craig. We'll start right out with some questions for you two.
Thanks, Scott.
To start, gentlemen, would you agree that data is the most significant challenge for a manufacturer looking to advance in its digital transformation journey, whether it's, for example, automating a factory or making use of AI or trying to establish a predictive maintenance program? Marcel and Craig?
Absolutely no question, Scott, because think of it like this. If you don't have power, you can't power your home. You can't power an office building. You can't drive a vehicle without either fuel or, you know, obviously a charged battery. Data is what makes the world orbit, shall we say. If the data is not available, if the data is not correct, if the data is not helpful, it doesn't really matter. You can't go forward with your digital transformation journey. You can't achieve what we like to say at ARC is the single version of the truth, because you're not going to have access to the information, the data that you need to give you the information or give your machines the information to make the decisions that need to be made to help operate any sort of a business. I mean, think of it in this world, let's say we're with people doing with IoT and being able to add a wide variety of sensors, say to a variety of assets, let's say rotating assets, for example, to do things such as asset management as part of IoT. But for you to be able to calculate if that asset is, how it's running, you know, how is it performing? If you don't have the right data and getting it from the right places and doing the right level of analytics on that data, and having the analytics tools to be able to convert that data into meaningful information that other machines can use to make the right decisions, or people can use to make the right decisions, because it's being presented to the machine and presented to the person in that appropriate manner. So you can't do things like preventative maintenance. You can't try to eliminate unscheduled downtime. And, you know, as such a hot topic, which we'll certainly cover later in our, you know, in our questions, of course, will be as artificial intelligence. You can't do artificial intelligence if you don't have the right data to be able to, again, put together the right algorithms to make the right decisions. So ultimately, if you have no data, you have no fuel. I know sometimes people like to use that analogy that, you know, data is the energy of today, you know, as far as from the valuable commodity. And when companies are paying for, when they're purchasing companies, for example, what's the most biggest asset they're looking to purchase? It's the data.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I agree. A wise man once said, without a data, you're just somebody else with an opinion. Yeah. And, so getting the data itself is not a big challenge. I mean, we do that as the industrial data company, relatively easy. It is, I think, getting the right data in the at the right time, and also make sure you got the complete data. So for that, you really need to bridge the gap between what is the outcome I'm looking for, and then work that back through the manufacturing plan and say what points of data are really critical to deliver that output. And that is what I think is going to be the right challenge. Because on one side, you know, what is exciting about industrial automation, we got a whole new group of people coming in, data analysts, you know, people are understanding AI, but they're not necessarily averse in what is a manufacturing plan and what is a manufacturing process. So I think the key thing is bridging those two things together. And really understand what sort of input do I need to achieve the outcomes. And then the technology in the middle is not that difficult. That's been around for a long, long time. So but I think that matchup is critical.
Gentlemen, we also talk about data overload in our title. Such a thing as too much data. ARC and Hexagon Forrester both see the generally poor quality of data, as well as its availability being a severe problem for manufacturers. What would you specifically recommend as some steps and strategies to combat the problem of poor data quality?
Well, you know, the thing is that in many cases, we always say it's drowning in data, because what happens is you're collecting more. You're collecting so much data, and it's assessing what is the value of that data, you know, as far as for, again, making decisions to help run an enterprise. You're just collecting it for the sake of collecting it. It is really to assess where all that data is coming from. What type of information are, you know, is it, what type of information is it presenting? Is it being analyzed? Is it working in conjunction with other data and information that's able to show, as we was mentioning earlier, about single version of the truth? Because the idea is, let's not drown in data that is not constructive. It's not going to help a company or people or machines make the right best decisions. And, you know, one of the things we also do, because it's something we get involved with very heavily, say at ARC, is, you know, you're going through the plants and you're doing these plant audits. And, you know, we're looking at things where, you know, the typical company has systems ranging from state of the art to 20 to 30 years old. Sometimes they're connecting on, you know, they're talking on proprietary networks that are would not say meet today's criteria of open standards. It could even be, you know, older OPC connections, you know, going back to say OPC DA, you know, for example. But so the idea is, you really have to start with a strong, solid foundation. What are you collecting, and how is what you're collecting, how can it be used? Does it need to be conditioned? Does it need to be cleansed? Does it need to be, you know, how, and then where is that data going? Because there was a time when typical data collection was going to other automation assets, for example. Maybe it's, you know, sensors going to a PLC or a PAC or a DCS system, you know, for example. But now, especially with asset performance management and collecting a lot of that IoT data, again, is it giving you something that's going to help you avoid a downtime or be able to predict when maintenance needs to be done? But if it's just collecting for the sake of collecting it, then that's really when you need to, you know, put together that solid data strategy. And in our opinion, one of the things that's going to accelerate that building that strong data foundation is with the acceleration of IT-OT convergence. Now you're getting the benefit of a lot of expertise from people in IT. And sometimes what that does is it brings fresh voices into the room, shall we say, and they can even, some people that can question, why are we collecting that? Why do we need to collect it? We've been collecting it for 40 years, and what is it really doing for us? It's not something that we're sending off to a historian or sending off to do something that's going to help us run the enterprise better and make some of those decisions to be able to eliminate the need to collect some of that data that is so rather than necessarily with you poor quality, but it's data that is not, you know, an asset to the organization.
I agree, Greg. I can give a couple of examples of that. So let's talk about predictive maintenance. And you mentioned rotating equipment, correct? Mm-hmm. So measuring a temperature on the bearing and say that's predictive maintenance is actually not that smart. At the moment, the temperature is too high, you're too late. Mm-hmm. So the way to do that is actually you put a vibration sensor on an accelerometer. In order to get a real reading and do predictive, you actually need to collect a signal at about above 20 kilohertz. To really do it well. So taking a temperature sensor for a vessel of 20,000 liters, you don't need to sample it at 20 kilohertz, correct? Maybe every hour is good enough because exactly. That it is. So you really need to understand the physical asset, what it does, and what is the right measurement tool on that to collect the data to get really insights out of that asset. That knowledge you need to have. And I give you another example. It is also make sure that you complete the measurement. So if you take a cookie factory, you can measure everything coming out of the controller, correct? But what is important in a cookie factory to measure is actually also the whole temperature and the humidity, because they have big impacts on parts of your process, for example, your drying process. So it is so important to really understand and what do I need to measure in order to get that? So you can get a good signal, but you might have the wrong signal or you're missing signal. And that's why flexible edge technology is so key, that you have that ability to collect all that data. And to Greg's point, not only out of the latest piece of equipment, but also that dryer which has been there in that plant for about 30 years, and they're not thinking about replacing it. So that is the key thing, getting the right data out of those different equipment, which might be different ages and very old. So I think that's key. So that's what you need to do up front in order to avoid bad data. Yeah. As I said, measuring a temperature on a 20,000 liter vessel every second doesn't make sense at all. So why would you measure it? Yeah. So that's it. And I think that is where you really need to look at the data analytics when you and look at the outcomes to say, what data do you need in order to deliver those outcomes?
Interesting, guys. Hey, what are some industry trends we are seeing in the space related to data that are transforming and redefining the future of industrial automation? This is really a digital transformation question, yeah. I think.
No question. Because, you know, if we look at, and I know you cited some of the statistics from some of our research, in your introduction. But, you know, right now we have, the technologies that we're more familiar with the last several years, like cloud and analytics, and actually also, with the increased emphasis on sustainability and reporting, for example, and edge and cloud integration. So we're already, making some progress in that front. But now it's to the point where looking down the road where we're, edge computing, for example, is even becoming more critical. For issue, which we can talk about later, like things like cybersecurity, for example, and keeping everything local, sure. local within the plant. But now is how are we leveraging a lot of that data that we've been collecting to do artificial intelligence, to do more applications with additive manufacturing, to do more applications where you know, one of the things where, you know, with cobots, for example, and with this smaller workforce, less experienced workforce, and the difficulty to recruit for positions, the use more of automated, AGVs, for example, on the factory floor to do more issues with material handling and warehousing and moving parts. But bringing that into the fold, but also areas like augmented reality and virtual reality, because the worker that is now on the factory floor doesn't have the benefit of the 20 to 30 years experience. And they need some of the technologies to give them that step-by-step guidance that you might get from augmented reality. Give them the training and be able to simulate different situations that they get from virtual reality, for example. And that's also the reason that you need all this data is with the surging in technologies like, you know, digital twins and simulation, the ability to actually deploy a project in a digital twin or simulation and do the appropriate testing. And now you can now, before the project is actually rolled out. So actually being able to do all that simulation first and plan any sort of a scenario and make changes, you know, based on what the simulation is telling us. But this is why this data that we've been collecting, you know, again, with things like cloud and analytics and sustainability is so critical, because all that is going to be integrated into using some of these latest technologies. And this is where, you know, ARC, you know, all our research just shows, you know, a substantial uptick in those technologies, you know, again, whether it be the increased use of cobots and automated guided vehicles on the factory floor, augmented reality and virtual reality to help with the shortage and lack of skilled workforce. And again, the point now where every asset may have a digital twin and every process may be simulated before it is deployed. So you can't roll out those technologies successfully if you're not doing a good job collecting that data, analyzing that data, and conditioning that data and cleansing that data so it can help deploy those technologies. And with kind of AI probably being the big star of the show right now, as far as looking down the road.
Yeah, I agree, Greg. You mentioned it, correct? I mean, if you look at the challenging of manufacturing thing, especially if you talk about the U.S. with all the reshoring, what's going on, which is great, correct? Building more manufacturing plants in the U.S. But we have a shortage of workforce, correct? And the only way to solve that is really by automating plants, be smarter in how we produce stuff. And then the other big thing is what we're all looking at is sustainability. And we see more and more, and I think that's a trend, a good trend from the last couple of years, that people are actually putting automation systems in there to improve their sustainability, you know, to improve their CO2 footprint. So I think that's a big part of the investments, what we see going on as well, really to make sure that we can produce what we need to produce with the workforce we have at a CO2 footprint, which is better, which is lower today than it was yesterday. So that is what we're seeing probably as the biggest trends. And then I think the other bigger trend, what we continue to see, is really the use of renewable energies and a lot of disparate assets around the country, which will be connected. Yeah. So of course, that is, we can talk about it later as a security risk, but we see that a lot more remote assets get connected as well, with the purpose of operate those assets a lot better. So I said a couple of months ago, industrial automation is cool again. And I think it is, because those are the challenges, the macro challenges we have today, partly we can solve through industrial automation and using this technology.
Interesting. Can you all identify certain challenges you're currently observing and can predict that companies will face as it relates to industrial data? Specific challenges.
I think that, I mean, a lot of the things we hear from customers now, with the challenges, like, for example, if we want to pick on artificial intelligence, for example, is the fact that they'll say, okay, but how do I, you know, what does that really do? You know, how do I collect that? How do I convert that into something that's meaningful? And how do I really deploy it to maximize the value? And what we try to say is, look at artificial intelligence as being able to try to make your workers more productive. You're not trying to replace your workers. You're trying to make your workers more efficient. because you're able to give them that information. You know, sometimes we look at it and say, you might ask, Siri a question, for example, or Alexa a question. But that's all going on the whole, the database of everything that's out on the web. This is a case, this is your private database. But you're actually that operator who is not familiar with, doesn't have, again, the benefit of that, those 30 years experience in the plant. But it's being able to provide your workers with that information that makes them far more efficient. And another challenge that we're finding is, and Marcel brought it up, was a fantastic point when he talked about with sustainability, is, even though companies certainly want to certainly be more sustainable and actually do implement more projects to make them more operationally resilient, so they can not only withstand floods and climate issues or supply chain shortages, for example, but it's really a big focus in on being more operationally resilient. But they're also, what they're finding, and this is one of the challenges they're having, is to justify some of these projects, they want to be able to show that what does it do besides maybe save, help with the circular economy, help save energy, for example, and that's all critically important. But they would need to be able to measure that, to be able to look at KPIs for sustainability. And what we're finding is when we do some of these projects, is there is a financial justification to doing sustainability and operational resilience. But the challenge they have is how do we put together the measurement system so they can put together the right KPIs to help them justify their investments, because they have to go through that same justification level of ROI, regardless of what they're purchasing. So a big challenge that they're having is how do we use that data that we're getting and put it in a way that shows the payback. And I can tell you, we put these cases together, and the numbers have really been outstanding. And I think if we can, I think that's one thing that people are looking at companies, let's say like Red Lion, that kind of help them, extract that data and convert it into something that really helps them with the justification process.
I agree, Craig. I mean, the one thing is, don't make it a hobby project or a side project. We see, I think the challenge has become, if you do it wrong, is how do you maintain that? Mm-hmm. The goal of a manufacturer is manufacture products and make money about manufacturing products. It's not to staff up a huge maintenance department and all that sort of thing. So I think the way to look at it, if you look at solutions you actually can manage. We see a lot of hobby projects where people are putting stuff together and it looks good, correct? And it's maybe good as a proof of concept, collect some data, put it into a database and, put it in one of the big scalers and then have some smart people looking at that data and say, hey, cool, look at what cool dashboards we got. I think the most important thing is you cannot scale up those things. So if you want to do that, get outside help to really do it, people who have done this before, so that they can implement a solution you can maintain over a longer time without spending too much money on it. And I think that is going to be the main challenge for people to have that. You don't want to install a lot of industrial computers you need to maintain in the plant floor all the time. So I think you want to have a designated edge solution, for example, which is easy to operate and easy to maintain, Okay.
As industrial companies face these new challenges, what advice do you have for them in need of data access solutions that can speak across all their systems, regardless of asset age or manufacturer? You talked about this a little bit earlier, but can you expand on that a little bit?
The thing is that you need to be able to have to work with companies, whether it be companies, let's say, such as a Red Lion, that truly understand what the words real time mean, how to deterministic, nonstop, the things that OT has lived with every day ever since they've been ever since you've had factories, because the idea is that you have to have that level of sensitivity. You know, sometimes we go into these plants and people will say, you know, some people have advised us that the only solution is that we need to rip out all this old automation equipment, all this 30 and 40 year old assets. And we say to them, that's not going to happen. You need to be able to live, to coexist in a world where the state of the art works with a legacy, that you have companies that you're dealing with a multitude of extremely strong and established vendors of these assets. And how do you help all these systems, all these assets work together? So how do you maximize the value of what's in the factory floor combined with state of the art? So how is AI going to live in a world where there are still 20, 30, 40 year old equipment on the factory floor, if not older? But you have to understand the concept of real time and the concept of putting this together. The other thing we find that's also very critical is in this world with accelerating IT and OT convergence within these plants. And this is certainly something we're seeing across the board, is helping to not only educate IT on on the nuances of OT, but at the same time, how do we leverage all the great technology that IT has to bring to the table? And, you know, the fact is that, you know, if you do need a data scientist, for example, or someone who has expertise in Python or C++, how do you leverage that working closely with IT? And that's something that's really critical, especially in the world of as these new technologies begin to get rolled out and deployed. But knowing the fact that we're not going to have an OT departments, you know, full of data scientists. But how can OT help with that? How can they work on things, for example, such as focus more on no-code, low-code solutions, for example? So new workers who go to the factory floor that don't have a level of expertise can do more point and click to configure solutions and be able to deploy and maximize the value of these assets. So that's something that's really important.
Yeah, Craig, I agree. So one of the things, what you see is that a lot of data analysts don't actually know where the data is coming from, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they just look at the data as data. Mm-hmm. And what is nice about the edge infrastructure, if you talk about IT-OT divergence, that's where it happens. So What you really can do, you know, is that we can collect all the data. The OT guys know how to get that out of all those old machines. That's one side of, for example, our FlexEdge solution, correct? That's our OT side. Mm-hmm. On the edge device, you actually can normalize and standardize your data. And now you can give that up to a system what can be used by the data analyst or the IT front with a clear interface in there. So you also have the security bridge there. But that is where you normalize and standardize that data on that edge. You understand that real-time part, what is needed, you know, like collecting a 20 kilohertz signal from a bearing, for example. And then you bring it up to an edge device, and then you normalize it and give it to the different consumers, data consumers in the IT space. I think that structure, if you keep that structure in place, that is really helpful for people to deploy, basically an industrial data structure.
Guys, I'm gonna close out our Q&A today with this very meaty question. Data transfer and storage need to meet increasingly stringent security requirements. Do you have recommendations on how manufacturers can meet security demands? We've covered OT vulnerabilities a lot lately. And a lot more is starting to come at us. A lot more alarm is coming at us about OT security. It seems like there's a lot of red alerts going up about OT security when it comes to other industries like utilities and power infrastructure and so forth. Can you answer that for us?
Well, there's no question that is, that's possibly the number one concern amongst, you know, whether it be every, you know, factory, plant, utility, what have you. And one of the things that we certainly recommend, and this is also part of the IT/OT convergence story, is leveraging a lot of the expertise that IT brings to the table. It also means working with vendors that understand, that have a, you know, that have a deep knowledge of you know, certainly of cybersecurity, both on the OT and the IT side. But at the same time, what it also means is, and this is, you know, Marcel really, you know, explained this beautifully about the reason why edge devices are so important, is people want to feel comfortable that not only do they have an industrially strength device on the factory floor at the point where the data is being collected. On this device, for example, the analytics can be run to process this data into meaningful information. So you're able to maintain, you know, real time. You don't have any issues with latency, having to send that data to be processed at some remote location, maybe a cloud location located halfway around the world, for example. And what that does is that builds another firewall of protection. So at ARC, you know, our advice is that to look at the edge device as, you know, as another one of your tools in defenses in cybersecurity. But that has to be part of a whole holistic strategy, which again is working with all your vendors, such as Red Lion, who completely understand all the cybersecurity issues and hurdles that need to be, the need and challenges that need to be overcome. And also working very closely with your IT department and taking advantage of that expertise that they've had for many, many years. So I think it's really a hybrid solution of looking at the type of hardware and software you're using on your factory floor, where those devices are located, and then looking, for example, and that's why when we look at cloud is integral to these solutions, but we look at the cloud and the edge as a hybrid solution. And that is really what you're going to need to be deploying down the road to really kind of mean to maximize your cybersecurity and to certainly leverage all the appropriate standards and leverage, and again, using your IT group also for a bunch of expertise in that area.
Yeah, I think we can learn a lot from IT, Greg. I agree on that. Well, keeping in mind that we're in an OT environment. So the one challenge, we can fill a podcast just about security, you know,
sure.
Or spend a couple of podcasts.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
One thing, just a very practical thing is...
And we have.
Yeah. So one practical thing, one of the challenges, what we got, correct, with this whole industrial data piece, is that we have so many data consumers, correct? We have suppliers who want to get data. Mm-hmm. We have design teams of some machine builders who want to get the data. We have quality department we want to do. You know, vendor managers, inventory, all those things we want to do. So we have all those different consumers of that data. And actually, you don't want to give them access to your OT layer. You don't, you know, because that is the critical part. Because I'm not saying they do anything wrong, but maybe somebody who comes there does something wrong with that. So actually, that edge device is a great buffer in between that. But then you have to make sure that if you do that way and you have multiple people having access to that edge device, and maybe that's not even the smartest way, you actually should do it to give multiple people data, access to the data in the cloud. But let's assume that you have multiple people looking at your edge device. One simple thing is user management. You know, somebody goes off, you know, it's not working longer at the plant anymore. You want to make sure that that user is disconnected. So if you have 500 devices in your plant, or pick a number, you know, you have to make sure you have standardized user management, centralized user management tool like Radius, correct? So one of the questions is very simple. If you select an edge device, do you support a centralized user management tool? If not, don't deploy it. Just don't. And I think that's the way we need to start looking at it. And that's sort of the IT thing, looking at it and say, hey, we understand pieces of the IT which are actually applicable to the OT layer, but some parts are not. Because the other part you cannot do on an OT layer is apply security patches every 5 days and then mm-hmm. just reboot the system, correct? That's not mm-hmm. really suitable in an OT layer with 24/7 production. So I think you need to look at that whole thing and you need to be very pragmatic, but you need to securely look at that and you really need to go to an FMA and say, okay, what are, you know, the potential security gaps and how do we solve that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you need to be very deliberate in how to do that.
Hey, Marcel and Craig, thank you. What an amazing presentation. We're going to wrap today. Thank you for joining Smart Industry to participate and for lending your expertise and insights on managing data. Boy, what a big topic. Cheers, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.